with Steve Maxwell on The Dean Show. Ooh.
This is The Dean Show. This is The Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
So I got my brother Steve here. Now we're gonna give you the breakdown. Hoist Gracie in the fight. Shamrock. He wants three.
I was there for the first two.
Yeah.
I was Hoist's conditioning coach for those first UFCs. I know his game really well. The guy's an amazing master of jiu-jitsu. So let's break it down. First of all, this whole hubbub about the knee to the groin. In those first fights, groin shots were allowed. Everybody knows from the time they're a little kid how to protect the groin. So don't be crying about groin shots, Ken. They were in the, what we call the universal clinch. We both had the same basic position in each other, over, under. And they both were trying to throw the knees. It did look like the one knee hit. When the knee hit, it looked like Ken kind of crumbled a little bit. Simple back heel takedown. There we go. From this position, Hoist quickly did the match, and then it was all over after that. So, congratulations, Hoist Gracie. He shows how powerful Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is, basic Jiu-Jitsu 101. Fight was over in what, like 30 seconds?
30 seconds.
But, hey, listen, man, classic clinch situation. You protect the groin. And no crying, Ken. The original fights, everything was gone. You wanted the rematch, you got it.
Steve Maxwell on The Dean Show. Enjoy.
Yeah, man.
This is The Dean. This is The Dean Show.
Back here on The Dean Show with Steve Maxwell, training over half a century. Century is 100 years. So over what, 53 years you've been
53
training?
53 years.
You've been taking this thing seriously.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
As a child, I was being bullied.
Yeah.
I was kind of a shy kid, actually. And my father saw the way it was going. He was a former Navy boxer during World War II. He was in the Pacific. And he was actually the Pacific Fleet Bantamweight champ back in the day. And he tried to teach my brother and I boxing. And I wasn't particularly good at it, but I would get really mad when my brother would get the better of me, and of course I would clinch him and take him down. My father said, "You're no boxer, you're a wrestler."
Yeah.
So that very next season, he literally made me go out for wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest thing that ever happened.
Yeah. Give us some advice now. There's a lot of different trends. You've seen them come and go. You've seen fads, you know, peak out and lose out, and you know what I like now? We talked about the doctors a little bit also, and nutrition, and being humble, you know, knowing that, you know, what we've scratched the surface, even a person's been studying 200 years, there's so much to learn.
So much.
And
to
some
learn.
People, that's where you get stuck when you think you know it all, and then the arrogance creeps in, right?
You really need to stay humble.
Yeah. So tell us, from your humble experiences now, you know, someone who's been around the block a few times, you traveled the war, and I'll get into that in a little bit about the bag and how much it weighs, but CrossFit, you've heard of this?
I have.
So let's start from there. What do you think about this? When did it start? And what is it?
It started back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
It might have started even in the late 90s, but I heard about it in the early, let's see, when did I hear about this? I opened my gym about 1990. Now, I guess it was the mid-90s I first heard about this. And at the time, I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, I like cross-training to an extent, you know. I, along with jiu-jitsu when I get the chance, I always enjoyed a bit of running and weight training, obviously. Mm-hmm. And when I get the chance, I like to swim and so forth. But I look at these as recreations. There's a big confusion between what constitutes exercise and recreation. Exercise is a 5-point definition. It should increase strength, increase endurance, increase cardiorespiratory health, increase mobility and flexibility, and prevent injuries. And most of these things that people are doing are actually recreations, not true exercise. So this confusion has filtered into what I call competitive exercise, and that's CrossFit. It's basically a sport where you're competing in exercise. But the problem is, if I said right now, hey, let's do some push-ups, you know, and let's get a good workout, you and I would be using really good form and going nice and slow, high tension, mm-hmm. and get a nice, safe chest, arm workout. But if I said to you, hey, man, I bet you $20 I could do more than you, of course we're going to throw form to the wind. And you're going to do anything in your power just to get the extra reps. This is a mistake. This is not the true purpose of exercise. Mm-hmm. Exercise should prevent injuries, not cause it. So anybody listening out there, if you're getting hurt doing your exercise, you need to take a hard look at what you're doing, because you're not exercising properly. Exercise prepares your body to do the things that we like to do, like running or cycling or swimming or tennis, golf, or in our case, we like to get on that mat and throw each other around a little bit. The true exercise is designed. Now, in tough boy sports, you know, you can't be playing rugby and soccer and basketball and, you know, some of these contact sports, ice hockey and wrestling and all that kind of stuff, MMA, without expecting to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of just when. Mm-hmm. But proper strength training should lessen the chance of that happening. And that's where people are going wrong. So if you look at the founder of CrossFit, this guy Greg Glassman, he's basically just a really overweight, virtually obese individual who is crippled up. Do you want to follow the workout advice from a guy like that? It makes no sense. It's like going to a nutritionist and the guy's really fat.
Or a doctor that's got a Coke machine, pop machine.
Yeah, or smoking, you know, smoking. And it's a well-known fact that many doctors are actually addicted to painkillers and drugs. So,
wow.
I mean, are these the people you want to entrust your health to? I think not. I think that you, for me personally, what's sustainable over a lifetime, you know? A lot of guys in jiu-jitsu train like there's no tomorrow. But you and I know there is a tomorrow, and you got to live with this body. Mm-hmm. So you need a sustainable training model that you can stick with for life. All my mentors were old men. See, I say, like, if you're listening to the advice of a trainer under the age of 60, he probably hasn't figured it out yet. Maybe mm-hmm. he has, but, you know, a 20 or 30-year-old has no clue what's going on. These are not people I would want to listen to. All my mentors were older guys, Master Elliot Gracie, his brother Carlos Gracie, Nikolai Amosov, who created the 1,000 Moves to Heaven joint mobility routine. He was a guy that came up with this amazing way of preparing your joints using the Russian Slavic health system. I trained with this old guy in Beijing, this Mr. Han, who does his Qigong and five animal gong system. These are the people I went to. I want to go to the guys that have been through to the other side. They've seen, you know, both sides of it.
Yes.
That I can trust what they say, because the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
America's own Jack LaLanne, he was a pretty good person to model your life on. Paul Bragg, another health pioneer.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, they got into their 80s and 90s and were still very spry, very healthy, and so forth. These are the people that I go to for health advice.
Yeah.
I'm not going to listen to the guy in Musclehead magazine or, you know, Men's Health or whatever that are like, you know, 30s. And even in the 40s, you still, you know,
yeah.
a lot of the guys still, they just don't know what it's like.
Yeah. Tell me, Steve, we'll make an even barter. How's this? You share with me your five pillars, and there are over 1.7 billion people that also live by some five pillars. I'll share with you these five pillars.
Well, you know, it's
you
really
want to start
funny.
You want to start out with the five? And I'll start out with these five?
When I did the five pillars, uh-huh. I got a huge amount of downloads from the Middle East.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wonder why all of a sudden I have such a good one. And then I realized, the five pillars, of course. But when you exercise, you want a good balanced
yeah. workout. So these are your five pillars?
Yeah, my five pillars is like a push and a pull. Right, both horizontal plane and a vertical plane. For every push you do overhead, you should do a pull. For every push, chest press or push-up you do, you should do some type of rowing movement, body weight row. when I say row, I'm not talking about a rowing machine. I'm talking about like an actual strength move. Then you have your squat for your thighs and your hips. And then you have a hinging movement where you're bending forward at the waist like a deadlift type movement. Yeah. And then there's rotation and anti-rotation. And there's another subcategory called ancillary movements where you want to work your fingers, your grip, your forearms, your wrist. Obviously, the neck in our sport, the neck's very important. Any type of contact sport, you want to make sure you work that neck. And the feet and the calves are very neglected. You want to work the toes, the feet. So many guys in jiu-jitsu and MMA break their toes and hurt their feet. So you got to keep the toes and the feet very, very strong. And obviously, the calves.
Yeah.
And when those feet are weak, by the way, there's a whole cascade of stress that goes into the knees, the hips, and the lower back, sometimes even to the shoulder. Mm-hmm. These injuries are often the result of very weak feet, ankles, and calves.
Is this still, this is all of them you went through?
Yeah, that was the five pillars of exercise.
Repeat them once again.
Yeah, okay. So there's pushing and pulling.
Pushing and pulling.
Okay, both horizontal and, vertical and horizontal.
Yeah.
All right. Then there's the squat.
Then the squat.
Some type of squatting, which includes lunging and all its variations. And then there's hinging.
Write it down, guys, now. Right hinging. Now, we got number three.
That's basically, maximum hip movement, minimum knee. The shins stay vertical.
Okay.
Like a kettlebell swing, like a Romanian deadlift or something like that. And then there's rotation and anti-rotation. Yeah. That'd be like your planking movement, side plank, where you're forced to use your core for stability and so forth.
Yeah.
Then there's a subset.
Now this is five.
Yeah. Well, that the rotation, anti-rotation is number five.
Five.
Okay. Then there's a subset I call ancillary movements or supplementary movements. Fingers, hands, wrist, forearms, toes, feet, ankles, and calf.
Yeah.
Neck. And sometimes some isolation movements for the abdominals can be quite effective.
Beautiful. That's the five.
Yeah.
Can I share with you our
five?
This is amazing because when I heard the five pillars, I thought, wow, this is something people live by, all across the world, no matter if you're from Poland, from Italy, from Ireland. It's the five pillars. The one is the belief goes back to spirituality, what you talk about purpose, really wanting to seek purpose, no purpose, and living by the belief that there's only one creator, one God, one deity, nothing worthy of worship except the one who created this whole universe and everything in it. Praying five times a day minimum, paying the poor due for tax to charity, to poor people, fasting during Ramadan, and one pilgrimage to the first house of worship built by Abraham is called Hajj. That's the five pillars. We got an even exchange.
There we go, man.
We'll take a break.
Sounds like a good way to base your life.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about the bag before we conclude. I still want to know how much it weighs here on The Dean Show with Steve Maxwell.
Women's rights. Misconception. Women have no rights. The image of a woman wearing a veil from head to toe, a woman who gets unfair justice, or a woman who is not allowed to drive, is an all-too-familiar notion when it comes to women treatment in Islam. And while there are Muslim countries in the world that do implement many harsh rulings against women, this should not be portrayed as Islamic law. Many of these countries have cultural differences that go against the teachings of Islam. It should be noted that during pre-Islam Arabia, women were used for fornication only and had no independence. The birth of a daughter in a family was considered humiliating, and the practice of female infanticide was uncontrolled. When Islam came back to being, verses in the Quran condemned the practice of female infanticide. Islam gave back many human rights to the women, and Muhammad was even reported saying that women are the twin halves of men. A Muslim woman is allowed to reject and accept any suitor for marriage, and has the right to seek divorce. There is nothing in Islam that forbids a Muslim woman from exiting her house and is allowed to drive. Also, in regards to education, a woman is obligated to seek knowledge, and it is considered a sin if she refuses. 2. By the sword. Misconception. Islam was spread by the sword. Historian DeLacy O'Leary states, history makes it clear, however, that the legend of fanatical Muslims sweeping through the world and forcing Islam at the point of the sword upon conquered races is one of the most fantastically absurd myths that historians have ever repeated. There is no record in history that shows people forced by sword point to convert to Islam. When Islam spread through countries, they would set up private churches and synagogues for the non-Muslims they were governing, and because of the good treatment they had received, they themselves would convert. If one considers the small number of Muslims who initially spread Islam to the West, all the way from Spain and Morocco into the East from India and China, one would realize that such a small group of people could not force others to be members of a religion against their will. It is also interesting to note that when the Mongols invaded and conquered large portions of the Islamic Empire, instead of destroying the religion, they adopted it. One, Islamic terrorism. Misconception: Muslims are terrorists. This is by far the biggest misconception of Islam, given unfairly by stereotyping and the public image that the media gives. Has anyone else noticed how when a specific group of people attack another group of people, it is labeled as a hate crime, but when a Muslim opens fire on anybody, it is quickly regarded as terrorism? Many political dictators and officials or extremist groups use the name of Islam as a strategy to garner followers and attention when many of their practices go against the true basis of Islam. The media has also portrayed Islam as a cult or a club where if you join, you become a terrorist, and that is now part of your agenda. However, all over the world, people practice Islam in the true form and use it as a way of life. There are many verses in the Quran that go against the idea of terrorism. Some of these verses include, "Fight the way of Allah, those that fight you, but do not transgress limits, for God does not love transgressors." This basically means do not fight except in self-defense, and even in doing so, do not go beyond defense. Another verse states, "If they seek peace, then you seek peace." Which means, do not attack people for no reason or kill innocent people. There is nowhere in Islam, whether it be in the Quran or the teachings of Muhammad, that promotes the killing of innocent people.
Subscribe right now.
Back here on The Dean Show with Steve Maxwell, man who's traveled the world and back. He's on The Dean Show. How much does that bag weigh?
12 kilograms. About 12.3 to be exact.
How many pounds is that?
What is 12 kilograms? Like 2.2 pounds to the kilo. So about 25 pounds.
Something. Wow. You know what? It reminded me. There's a prophetic saying, a hadith, what we call it. It says, be in this world as a traveler. Now, when I look at you, this is a great example for it's the concept of you're not going to go ahead and build a house at the bus stop. You're not going to go ahead and, you know, when you rent a room at the hotel, you start designing it and whatnot. You're there temporarily, right? Against the hoarding, against, you know, just making this temporary life that we're in a permanent home. This is a transition point. Plant seeds of goodness, serve others, be in the service of people, you know, live your purpose, but don't get attached to something that's temporary. And you got that concept down packed.
It's also important not to get too attached to this flesh body either, you know? The guys with the big preening, pumping muscles and so forth. You know, the girls that are really arrogant and egocentric with the figure. Yeah. It's all going to go away.
Botox, distox.
It's going to go away, man. So no sense getting attached to any of this stuff. And I have to tell you, I went from a very simple lifestyle to where I owned a gym, two floors filled with equipment, you know, four-story brownstone house in two cars, a TV in every room, and so forth. But I wasn't particularly happy. I was very stressed, to tell the truth. And once I rid myself of all my earthly possessions and took to this nomadic lifestyle, it was never so liberating or freeing in all my life. And I basically have one Tom Bin 45-liter travel bag. It's about this wide, about that high. And I like to wear it on my back. When you travel like I do, roller bags are terrible. You know, changing trains, going up and down stairs, cobblestone streets. In some cases, you know, like snow or ice, you don't want a roller bag. It's better to carry it on your body. And I also like to feel the weight of my possessions. You know, I like to literally feel the weight of my body. And I have like a little man purse with my cords, my iPad, and a couple, you know, papers and stuff. And that's it. And I've been doing this for a while. And every couple of weeks, I'm in a new country, new place. I get a chance to see the entire world. I'm not stuck like just in one little town or one little area, and all I know is like tunnel vision.
Yeah.
I get to enact with people all over, many cultures and diversity. So you get a much more global view of the world and what's going on.
Yeah, I like what you said, that my existence wasn't to make money. You mentioned something about me not being bought or sponsored. Can you elaborate on that?
I have no sponsors on my YouTube page. I've had many people try. Nothing on my website. I'm not against making money. We all need money to live.
Yeah, we need to survive.
But I'm not
going to
sell my soul for the almighty dollar. No way. I feel like, you know, if I start allowing some of these advertisers that I don't necessarily use or believe in, that's selling out. So anything that you'll see in Steve Maxwell's site or whatever are things that I actually use myself. I basically think it's a sin to start being a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You know, start espousing things just to make the money.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to stay as pure to my ideals as I could, you know? So, I mean, that was the idea behind it. So I very strict about what I allow on the website and what I don't. And yes, I need money, you know, to live, but I don't live for money.
Yeah.
Money is just...
How many people got it, but at the end they're miserable, right? There's more to life.
It's like people that live to eat,
yeah,
you know,
uh-huh,
instead of... you know, eating to live. Yeah, well, it's, you know, the same thing with money. Some people just, you know, it's all about accumulation and storing and hoarding and gaining. But that's not what we're here for. That's at least in my belief system that, you know, that's money is a consequence of what I do, not why I do it.
Have this world in your hand, not in your heart.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're out of time, and I know you packed light. Here's a gift. You can't come on to Dean Show and not get a gift.
All right, man. Nice and bag.
Thank you.
I will definitely put this little bag to use.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
God bless you.
Thank you for being with us here on the Dean Show. We look forward to when you're in town. You got a home here. Visit again.
Thank you.
And
so
visit.
Much.
Where can people look you up now if they want to contact you?
MaxwellSC.com, www.MaxwellS, as in strength, C as conditioning, SC.com. Lots of really cool video downloads, stuff that I believe in. And also a whole list of all my seminars coming up. I'm doing a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu for a Lifetime training camp in Maui this next spring. You got to come.
Thank you.
It's going to be with Luis Herrera at Maui Jiu-Jitsu. It's going to be an unbelievable training camp.
Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Subscribe right now.